Hello, my name is Sam Dunnewald, and I am the host of Dice Exploder, the Emmy-nominated podcast all about RPG design right here on the Many-Sided Network. And after years of interviews and ideation with some of the best designers in RPGs, my first print game is coming to Kickstarter. Band-Aids and Bullet Holes, a John Wick-inspired game about getting your bloody revenge. Band-Aids and Bullet Holes is a game about standing in the shadow of a skyscraper in the pouring rain, bathed in bubblegum neon and someone else's blood, staring down at the man who ruined your life all those years ago, raising the barrel of a gun and asking, "Will you pull the trigger?" Band-Aids and Bullet Holes is a one-shot capsule game box set deck builder RPG, and you can follow it right now on Kickstarter. Back Band-Aids and Bullet Holes on May 5th.
This is Celine Kilvaris, log entry. Yesterday, I lost control. My powers flared, and poor Dex was caught as collateral. Eventually, I tried to walk out of the office and leave the building, but Dorian blocked every exit. He wanted the truth laid bare between us, wanted to explain why he protected RO55, why he lied, why he broke every oath we were raised on. But all I could hear was betrayal, and all he saw was me trying to run. In the end, nothing was solved, nothing forgiven. We eventually boarded the venture because duty forced our hands, not because trust was restored. And that's where we stand now. Two siblings bound by an oath they no longer agree on, heading straight into the dark.
Strength is duty. Strength is duty.
No. Well, here we are, the Kilvaris siblings.
Well, I wanted to sit in this awkward silence a little bit longer. Hold on.
Oh, you see, I can't stand the awkward silence, so I'm forced to make a noise.
Okay. I'm kidding.
Two very opposite takes of awkward silence.
Celine is in the med bay with Dex. She's trying to fix herself up. She's taken a few hits, and to be honest, they were self-inflicted because of her crash out. And unfortunately, there was a lot of collateral damage, and she's in the med bay right now helping out Dex. He has a little bruise on his right paw, and so she has him laying down, and she's like wrapping it up and putting like a little cold compress on his paw. And he feels better. There's a lot of stuff that we have that
our ship's little med bay would have top of the line treatment.
Yeah, so Dex is feeling great, but she still feels very bad now that she has calmed down a bit. Adrenaline has dropped, but she hasn't gone out to wherever Dorian is at.
What color is Dex right now?
It's a mix of gold, red, and white, to be honest.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, Celine is still very angry, and she is hurt as well, so probably some blue. He's a lot of the colors, except for green and gold, really. So if he's feeding off of what she's feeling, and Celine has calmed down, but she hasn't gone out to wherever you are. And I imagine you know where they're at.
Yeah, Dorian would be at the front of the ship, the cockpit pilot area. He would be making sure that the course to Calypso has nothing in the way. There's no new debris or anything, that it's a clear shot. The path to Calypso is known by those who leave Hyperion City to travel through space. So it's a rather routine journey. It's a long journey, but it's a routine journey. And floating around him is Icarus, his utility bot who's come for the journey. He looks over at Icarus and confirms the footage has all been deleted, right? Do you want to do me a favor, Icarus? You want to just go make sure that Dex is all right? I suppose Celine as well. Here. And Dorian's going to go into his jacket and he's going to grab these little snacks that he would usually give Dex when he sees him. These little cube treats. He puts a few into Icarus's one of his little tendril hands becomes a bowl and it trickles a few in there. Consider that a peace offering. Hopefully she doesn't shoot the messenger, but he taps him on the top of his jellyfish robot dome. Good luck. Dorian sits back and takes a long look at himself in the reflection of the mirror, like through the expanse of space, and really thinking about the things that he said and, more importantly, the things he didn't say.
Celine now has her head. It's resting on the elevated bed that Dex is laid on, and her face is like right in front of his. She has her hand on his head and is like brushing it, the top of his head, and rubbing it. I'm sorry, boy. I'm so sorry.
You hear the soft whirring of Icarus. Like he peeks in with his little dome head and then slowly brings the little tendril out with the bowl and makes the jiggling sound of the treats inside that I would presume Dex recognizes the sound or the smell at least.
Dex tries to get up, but because I want him to rest off of the pod, kind of hold him down.
Icarus's tendril, he extends it out towards you.
And I'll grab him. What is this, a peace offering?
Icarus nods and then plays back Dorian's voice from what he just said. Consider this a peace offering. And you could tell that it's like he walkie-talkied it over.
I grab the treats and I say, get out of here.
Slowly leaves the room. It does a little soft little wave with its little tendril, but then shuts the door very quickly.
She just eyes it and I'm looking back at Dex. You want these, boy? Then I'll put one, offer it to it, hand up. Immediately eats it. Eats all of them, actually. And then I go back to, like, hands crossed, chin on her hands, and resting on the bed with Dex next to me.
In my opinion, I think between the two of us, our characters probably take the first, like, at least third of this journey to just kind of cool off separately. And Dorian very much gives Celine space in the med bay with Dex and does not bother her at all, other than Icarus going to give treats and make sure the ship is on course and quietly.
How long
roommates.
Do we say that? how long do we say that is?
I'm trying to remember what we agreed on, how far Calypso was away from Hyperion, the planet Praefectus.
I wanted to say that it was like a 2 or 3 day journey.
I believe that's what we agreed on, a couple of days.
Yeah.
So probably we left late in the evening. Like we left in the evening. So we probably sleep in the separate, like in our quarters and not really interact until probably part of the next day, I would say.
That same night, I'm going to say it's really late and Celine is going to call her mother.
Okay. Okay.
Your face.
No, it's just so funny because I remember last session Dorian was threatening to try and call mom, but...
Yeah. You weren't able to... She didn't answer.
No, she didn't answer. But you're doing a direct call.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it's quite late, so it's not a certainty that she'll answer.
Do you want to do a percentile to see if she'll answer?
Let's see. It is about... It's close to midnight.
True.
And we left around 7 or 8.
Yeah. And my argument to at least keep it 50-50 is that if she used to be an enforcer, a, a, a praetor and an enforcer, she'd be used to late hours, so there's a good chance she might still be awake.
Right, right. So you want to keep it 50-50 then?
I think 50-50. No.
Okay, not 75-25. It should be 60-40.
60-40. 60% chance she's awake, 40% chance she's asleep.
Okay.
So we want a 60 or lower to see if she's
60
up.
60 or lower? Okay. Oh, that's 79. She's asleep. She doesn't answer.
You could try calling Dad.
Nope, she really wanted her mother. Yeah, even though, you know, loves Dad. But he might side with Dorian.
She wants someone who will side with her. very siblings pitting their parents against each other.
We could call Dad, but he goes to sleep even earlier than her.
I think it's a 30-70. I think Magnus Kelvaris is a morning person, gets up very early, but also just crashes at like 8. Winds down at sundown, is in bed by 8, asleep by 9. So,
yeah. So what would that be?
I think 30-70. I think it's a 30% chance he's awake.
Okay. I knew this was going to happen. I knew that he was going to answer. So 29 means he answers, yeah?
Yeah. I think with a 29, I think, you know how even in this future, a phone will ring multiple times and you think, oh, once it gets to the fifth ring, that's when it'll go to a voicemail or like an auto message. But as soon as the voicemail thing comes up, you hear the voice first.
Oh, Celine. Celine, is that you? Let me get my face on. Hold on.
And you can see the camera, like the little visual, like tilts and shuffles around. And then you see your father. And Dorian's father, Magnus Kelvaris, when I think of him...
Well, we haven't like delved deep into it, and I don't want to do like exposition dumb, but I think we are technically step-siblings, but our parents married when you were 3 and I was like 6, so all we know is each other, so we don't introduce each other as step-siblings.
No,
so.
No, it's one of those unspoken things we just don't say.
So, yeah, so he is a... very kind, loving, like soft, but he's a black man. Mother is white. And oddly enough, you know, I think to say we don't see color is cheesy, but I think that's the case, unfortunately.
It's cheesy, but it makes sense. And
yeah, so, but yes, he's like a black man, I imagine.
I kind of imagine like a well-groomed, gray with some, but well-groomed, like almost like a lion's mane, sort of like finely groomed and cared for beard with fine hair going back.
Yeah, likes to wear like flowing clothing. He wants to be comfortable, very smart.
Yes.
I think people underestimate him because of how nice he is, but he's actually just quite brilliant and is the head of Kelvaris Dynamics. So, and that's for a reason. It's not because he's an idiot. Like he knows what he's doing, but he's a nice guy.
He comes off goofy, but is actually very good at what he does.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he's up. Like you could see, he's in like his like little like his night clothes, and it, like finally tilts it forward.
Oh, Celine, Celine,
father,
it's so late. Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm doing all right.
Oh well, what can I do for you? I apologize. You know your old man. He goes to bed early and needs...
Yeah, I apologize for waking you up. Did I wake you?
Well, yes, you did wake me, but you don't ever have to apologize for waking me. It's more than all right. I don't have anything on the schedule tomorrow until the afternoon anyway, so no worries. If you're concerned about...
And Mother, Mother is asleep there next to you?
For the moment.
You seem like peer over. You could see like she's turned over.
Yes, for the moment. She was out late with some of her associates, and so a little more tired out than normal.
Yeah, I haven't called you in a few weeks.
It has been that long, hasn't it?
Yeah. So just wanted to check in on you, of course.
Oh, well, I'm doing well. the projects in robotics. I'm not sure if your brother mentioned anything, but we've been working on some projects in the robotics department, and it's moving slow but steady, and we have a presentation to give to the higher councils in a couple of days, and I feel very confident that we'll get the funding we need for what I am presenting. It'll just create a better resource for energy and efficiency in all of Hyperion City.
Yes, I... Well, you're brilliant with your words, so I have no doubt that you will.
And you! How are things going for you, Miss the Monarch? I've been... I have caught some of Ace Bellerin's segments about you.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think he's obsessed with you. Imagine that.
He very well might be. But, you know, I don't like to deal with being in the public eye.
Ever my humble daughter.
I try to be.
And you can... He can see that her mind seems to be off in another place.
Oh, yeah, he knows you. Like, parents know when something's up.
Celine.
Yeah?
You can be honest with me.
You see he gets up and he like shuffles over to a balcony. He shuts the door to kind of let Lucinda continue to sleep. And you can see a little like a bit of the background of, you know, the gold district behind him as he turns. He's like,
something must be on your mind if you're calling me this late.
And there is a beat where she's looking away.
Yes. Oh, yes, there is something on my mind. I'm just not sure how to say it.
Well, you know I'm always here to listen and support you, no matter what. I know we can be a bit scattered with duties to the city and things like that, but in the end, we're all family, and...
Isn't our duty to the city above all?
You sound like your mother.
I guess so.
There's duty to your city, your things to civilization, I suppose, but I would also say that there's also a duty to your family, your loved ones, the people who are important in your life. I suppose that also includes duty to yourself.
Duty is gold, no?
As the mantra says, duty is gold, but we are as golds, we have to represent it, and I can think of no gold more precious in my life than you, Dorian, Lucinda.
So should we honor our family first, above our gold brethren and sisters?
He, like, turns to the back of the window to, like, kind of see if he sees Lucinda stirring.
There are many who debate that what is more important, the continuance of our society's progression into tomorrow, or making sure that we have people around us to share tomorrow with. And I, for one, like to think of the latter. There's no utopia in the future if you don't bring people along with you. And people will always bring conflict, and with that you must bring compromise, and...
I'm wondering, because you and Mother have such differing views, but you've been married for so long, I imagine. You make it work somehow.
Well, yes, of course. It's because we love each other, and... We might differ and butt heads and have different opinions about a great many things, but the things that we do agree upon, like making sure that you and Dorian are thriving and are safe, that's very important to us. And
would you say that love goes above our philosophies and our deep-held morals?
Now you're starting to sound like your brother. I would talk with him about these philosophies quite a bit. But, it's something that I don't think is agreed upon in a grand scale. But I think if we stopped looking forward and looked at where we were standing sometimes, I think it would become less of an argument and more of a conversation, if that makes sense. We as Golds are always looking forward. We're one step towards tomorrow, but I think we can sometimes lose sight of what's going on today.
And what is the stance of the Kel'Varis family?
You just said it.
What?
Celine, family. You could take my credentials, you could take my titles, you could take away my money. I'd give it all away to make sure you, your mother, and your brother were safe. And I'd do it without a second thought.
Do you think Mother would agree with you? If you're being honest.
I think I could sway her. As you said, I have a way with words. I don't think it would be a short conversation. But I think I could win her over. I've been able to do that for a few decades now.
So you think love and family is a good enough argument for the great Lucinda Kel'Varis to forgo her beliefs of golds in this society?
I suppose a true answer would be to ask her yourself, but I don't think that if Lucinda had to choose between you kids and her legacy, I don't think it would, as much as I am disappointed to say I don't think she would make the decision immediately, I don't think she would make that decision without really thinking about what's inside. I know she can be stern and harsh, but she's still your mother, and
he takes a moment.
I'd like to think she'd make the choice for you over that.
If Dex was near you right now, what color would he be showing?
Where is that scamp?
I'll kind of move the camera so he can see Dex laying down.
Oh, there he is. Oh, he's getting so big.
See the little ears perk up.
I remember when you first got him, he could fit in a shoebox.
He could.
Well, I'd like to think Dex would show. What is it? Is it white? For truth and passion?
Yes.
I would think that. I've never been one for lying. You know I'm terrible at gambling.
Well, I don't ask because I think you're lying, Father. I just have a
Why
lot
would
to...
would you think I would lie to you?
I don't think so. I just have a lot on my mind.
Have you talked to Dorian about this?
No, but I think it's time I did.
Oh, good. I'm sure he's probably still up. I have to check on him, too, at some point. Make him look through my presentation for edits. But you should come to the presentation, you and him. It'd be good to see you. I'm not sure what your schedules are. I know we all have our duties, but as we just had this whole conversation, if you could squeeze some time in for your old man, it'd be nice to see you both.
I'll look at my schedule, and I'll let you know.
Splendid. Soar with the wings of Kel'Varis, my daughter.
Okay, Father. Send Mother my love.
And send Dorian mine as well.
Have a good night.
You too, my child.
And with a warm smile, he hits the wrong button, but like in zooms in, then he hits it and zooms out. Oh, confound it, and turns it off.
Hi, my name is Robin.
And my name is Dylan.
Do you like Choices Matter video games?
If so, we started this podcast, Dorkspawn, so that I could show my best friend my favorite RPG series of all time, Dragon Age.
And now that I've played it, we want to share more of these choice-heavy games with each other.
Right now, Robin is showing me Mass Effect, which I have never played before.
And we are going to continue playing through these games together and discussing them book club style as we go.
You can join our Discord and play along with us, and tune into Dorkspawn every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
Where is Dorian?
Dorian?
It's a few hours later.
Dorian would be sitting in the main, like, I would say, I don't want to say parlor, but I would say like the mess hall area of the place. He'd be set up on the like it's on the sofa, like long sofa, sitting there, and I think he would be sitting playing a game. He would have his wrist highlighting the ceiling of the ship with a simple puzzle game that he would be sitting there trying to solve at a maximum difficulty. And you could hear the sounds of, like, almost like a game, like the tilt sounds of, like, you know, you lose. And just soft, just like completely lost in it.
And then you see Dex appears next to you.
Oh, hey buddy, how are you?
He just goes up, rests his head on your leg.
He pauses his silly game. He reaches over and he pets Dex behind the ears. Glad to see you up on your feet. Did you get my message? Of course you did.
And then you hear,
oh, couldn't sleep?
Celine walks in from behind you. She doesn't answer, but she does sit across from you. So, like, that game, yeah, and the holographics of the game are in between you both?
We are on course. Doesn't appear to be any issues at the moment. Should get there in a day and a half.
I didn't ask for coordinates.
No, you didn't. I'm just spouting information because I'm uncomfortable.
And why is that?
Because I lied to the most important person in my life, and I feel guilty about it. And I don't think there's enough I'm sorries that would make up for that. But I'm still stupid enough to try. So here's the first...
Don't say it.
Okay.
Don't say it.
Well, are you still hurt?
I'll be fine.
I haven't... Good. I know the ship had plenty of supplies and, well...
Are we going to talk about the ship's supplies?
Not anymore.
Just start from the beginning, please.
All right. There's a sig- you're familiar with the corruption, the Neuralink viral attack that happens to Reds occasionally and just slowly corrodes away all their sense of self, and they become nothing but machines of violence and malice and unpredictability. I mean, you see them all the time. I don't need to tell you. Sorry. Went to teacher mode. Well, I've been trying to figure out why they happen and if there's a way to prevent it. Because losing Reds, on one hand, is unfortunate, but on the other hand, from a utility perspective, is bad for businesses, bad for progress. And but 4 years ago, one of the first few Reds that came to me was Ross. And he had severe stages of the corruption. But I'm not sure what it was, but he rewrote it in his own neural network. And I scanned him. I kept surveillance on him. I questioned him. I ran everything I had at the time on him. And there was no explanation as to how he was capable of removing it from himself. And if anything...
And somewhere between then and now, you started this demented friendship?
Demented's a word, I guess. Well, I talked a lot with him. At first, it was more doctor-patient, but his personality really came out, and he began to ask questions about me, and, well, I don't have a lot of people that I spend time with outside of work, and I kept him around. I would talk to him more and see. On one hand, I was looking at him as a rare study, and then, yes, it did become a friendship. Because just like our human minds, every Red's neuro network is different and unique, and if anything...
Dorian, I don't care about a Red's neural network.
I would think you would, because a lot of it is applied to your job and your station.
My job isn't to learn about their neural networks.
But if you could, you could mitigate the incidents, and there would be less destruction and potential tragedy and collateral.
Then I'd be out of a job.
You wouldn't be out of a job. You would find something else to go and fight. There's always crime.
Hmm.
If anything, statistically, there are more crimes done by non-reds. But that's not the conversation for now. I knew that having any sort of friendship with him would have been a death knell for the family. And also, trying to take him on as an assistant or working labor in my lab would have drawn attention from someone else because of the way his neural network worked. It was so unique, someone else would have tried to take him apart and maybe not even put him back together after studying him. And I didn't want to do that.
Is this supposed to make me feel better about this friendship?
No, it's supposed to help you understand. You asked to tell you from the beginning, and I'm telling you, Ross is unique. And
that's not his name.
He chose it.
Reds don't choose their names. They are assigned a designation. He is RO55.
I told him that, and he asked, isn't Ross just easier to say? And with a question like that, my curiosity was piqued, and...
And here we are.
Yes. Well, Ross's intelligence is like that of a supercomputer, but his emotional intelligence is like that of an adolescent. I've never beaten him at any contest of wits, ever.
Mm.
And if anything, I saw that as a challenge to myself, and also a competition.
So this RO55 is smarter than you, you're saying?
By a little bit.
Mm.
I don't want to wound myself too much, but...
And this is how he's able to clean Reds.
This was a theory we were both talking about, because the corruption seems to have some sort of correlation to the codes that they're identified by. And I theorized with Ross that perhaps these corruptions are not random, that perhaps they're being picked like a lottery. And if there was a way to trick the lottery system, this theoretical lottery system, that might prevent corruption from happening. And perhaps more Reds would be able to ascend their intelligence like him, have a bit more of a personality, a bit more... You're going to hate this.
And why would a Red need a personality?
They live among us. They are just as similar to us in a lot of more ways than you think. Yes, there are synthetic wires. Yes, they don't have real, true organs, but they think, they can feel things that happen to them in a different way than us, but they can feel it, and they can hold memories and have opinions on those memories, not just, oh, I enjoyed this recreational activity, not just, oh, I did a recreational activity today. Ross enjoys playing games.
It's not his name.
I don't expect you to call him that, but that's what I've been calling him some... Anyway, about the code. It was a theory that I was thinking about with him because of the way his code not only resisted the corruption, but completely repelled it. And I didn't realize that in the same time I was studying this theory on him, he was studying my theories. And he told me that he was going to try something, and I told him that it would not work. By the seven, I even told him, listen, I could even try to see if I could get him an audience with Father. Because of all the people I can think of, he would potentially listen, because Father listens to everyone. But he, like I said, with an adolescent's mind and ambition and emotional charge, he started doing things without me. And then he immediately knew I was tracking him.
You know that this is treason, what you've done.
Openly talk about a theory, or having a friendship with a Red?
Possibly both. How do you think the tribunal will take it?
Personally, I don't think the tribunal could argue the semantics of what a friendship is.
That doesn't matter, though, does it?
He stands up, and Dex would see colors of pure white and some blue this entire conversation. There's no green, not even a flash of it in what he's saying. I need to talk to him. I'll get him to stop this, or at least to try to understand what he's doing, because there something can be salvaged from this.
With all due respect, Orion, that's not our job.
No, it's not.
It's not to talk to him and to see reason.
It's not your job.
Our job is the same. Were we not put on this mission together for the same task? Do you have a secret task that I don't know of?
We are out to capture him, not kill him. We're not retiring him, we are capturing him. And I think if we capture him, I can talk to him.
You're right. The task is not to kill him. I had no intention of doing so.
The last time you were asked to not retire a Red, you did it anyway. And he thinks about saying something about trust, but then retracts it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind.
My job is to find RO55, and I will do that. And he will be seen before the tribunal.
You don't even want to know why.
And that's it. That's what the job is.
One of these days, I hope you see that your job isn't everything. I think KL would have convinced you otherwise.
Don't mention him.
I said what I said.
Don't mention his name. I just need to know that when the time comes, you will not be in my way. I'm going to bring in RO55 no matter what.
I swore a vow to capture him. I also made a promise to Ross that I would help him.
Well, then you'll have to choose, brother.
An impossible puzzle?
You're the one that's making it impossible.
So what happens if I choose to help him?
Then you reject me and the rest of our family.
How do I reject them by helping a friend?
I think you know, Dorian. You think it's unfair, but that's the way things are.
It doesn't have to be.
But it is. So, I want to let you know that I will stop at nothing to catch him.
I said I would help catch him. That is the vow, was to catch him.
It is. And I do want to say something else. I talked to Father, and he had words of love and family and...
He was awake.
He was awake. The first surprise.
Did you tell him what was going on?
Of course not. I would never endanger his life. But I did want to apologize. I said some things when I was getting onto the ship that I didn't mean. I would never hurt you.
I know you didn't mean it.
But I do have a job to do, and I will get it done.
You always do. I'm gonna go make some tea to help me get back to sleep. Would you like some?
It's okay.
All right, I'll make breakfast in the morning and check navigations, and for what it's worth, I'm at least also curious to see Calypso up close.
She just nods at you. She's going to stand up, and then she's going to the cockpit area. And so the door opens. She heads in, waits for Dex to follow her, and the door shuts behind her.
Dorian thinks about some things he could have said, but knows that this was the first step to trying to mend the bridge. So he just sits down for a moment and then goes over to start making tea. Icarus floats out from underneath the table where he sat the whole time. I'm like, oh yeah, you were scared? So was I. And he makes himself some tea and thinks about what the next steps are going to look like. Would you argue that there was an attempt to hearten in this situation?
I don't think... I think Celine did want to apologize. Do you think that that's what Dorian was trying to do?
Yeah.
I guess it depends on the definition of hearten.
Socialize, share intimacy, find a moment of peace. That was a moment of peace.
Then I guess so.
I'm going to try to roll
hearten
then for Celine. Are you kidding me? Well, this is great timing for that. Momentum, because it is not going to be a miss with a match. It is going to be a strong hit with a match. There have been so many matches this entire campaign. I am gobsmacked with the amount of them.
I know. It's crazy.
We're not even going to read miss because it didn't happen.
Okay.
Strong hit with a match. You find your companionship or comfort and your spirit is strengthened. If you are shaken, clear an impact, take it one spirit.
Okay. Nice.
Or otherwise take two. So... I would argue that gives us each one.
Sure.
Or actually, no, you're at three, right?
Mm-hmm.
It actually makes more sense to just give you two, because I think between talking to Magnus and now talking to Dorian, I think there's a little more groundedness in you, and I think more resolute. Like, you know, you're going to do your job. You apologized. You understood. You heard. You listened to Dorian and you listened to Magnus. So I think you're a little. I think the spirit should go back to you, and I think Dorian should stay at 4 because he's still stressed about choices he has to make.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I think that's. I think that's what I would go to. And
I don't think we technically rolled set a course.
No, that I well, this is where we would roll it now.
Yeah, so let's see. I'll roll set a course. Yeah, let's do it.
Roll with supply. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing we resupply.
Nice.
Strong hit.
That is a strong hit. So we reach our destination, and the situation there. How do we think the situation favors us? I'm gonna say it's a sort of montage of the next day of travel, and then slowly we start to see this wide, large, behemoth derelict ship.
Yes.
Calypso, what we've heard in the history books. It's very ancient, and it looks it as well, falling apart in different areas. And so we're right, like our ship, the Venture, looks tiny as we're floating in next to it.
We are insignificant compared to, this is a dreadnought. This is like a city on a ship.
But the situation favors us. So that can mean a few things. I have one idea, but if you have ideas.
The only idea I can think of is perhaps because we tracked the ship that left because of the tracker you had.
Yeah.
I think we know where they docked and know that where we can safely dock our ship and get onto the dreadnought proper and then follow them. That's what I think. I think the blip for the ship can lead us to where it's safe to like put Venture while we go looking for him. But I will also hear out what you think, obviously.
Mine was similar, actually. So I very much agree with that. And the next thing I was going to ask is, should the Find the Reds within Calypso, should that progress track be marked because of that strong hit?
Oh, it absolutely should.
So our ship is coming upon... We see another ship. We don't technically know whose it is, but I did have a tracker on at least one of them. I'm locking in. I'm zeroing in on it. I know that I need to turn on... The cloaking device so that we're not seen. And that's the next step.
Dorian throws his jacket on. Ajax's little gold crab climbs up to his shoulder. He looks at Icarus and then he looks out to make eye contact with you. Let's do this.
She fixes her Kelvaris pin, tightens the gauntlets, and sets course for the ship to lower. Thanks for listening to Iron Rising, a Starforge actual play. I'm Maya Wilson, and I've been Celine Kelvaris.
I'm Michael Gilbert, and I've been Dorian Kelvaris. And together, we bring the world of Hyperion City and the Law of Seven to life.
If you're enjoying the series, leave a review or comment wherever you listen. It helps more than you know.
We also have a companion blog for those who'd like to dive a little deeper into the Forge. All links are in the episode description.
And we'll catch you in the next one.